Welcome to episode 10 of the series Reflections for a Church in Lockdown. If you listened to last week's podcast, you might be expecting me to begin a new series of reflections on Philippians. I've allowed myself to linger for one more week in the Old Testament as we look forward and begin to rebuild. Last Sunday, I was due to be in Holy Trinity Headington Quarry on the edge of Oxford for a service of confirmation, one of many that's had to be postponed. Laura, the vicar, asked me to preach as part of the virtual service on what would have been the confirmation readings, the profound and beautiful picture of the river of life from Ezekiel 47, and the gospel reading about springs of living water from John 7. I found it really helpful at this point in our journey through the pandemic to revisit the river of life, and that's what I want to do in this episode. The passage has been an important one at different stages in my own life and ministry. Clergy across the diocese will remember that we took this passage as the theme for our clergy conference just over 2 years ago, when several hundred of us were able to gather in Swanwick in Derbyshire for what was a blessed and remarkable time of fellowship and growing together. But as I explored the passage again, I was struck by how relevant it is to the present moment. We are now just at the point of reopening and rebuilding. We are able to open our churches for private prayer, and many have done so with a very fruitful response. I'm now about halfway through meeting with our clergy chapters across the diocese, and I know thoughts and prayers are turning to what it may be like to hold physical services once again, with restrictions and the challenges of having, for a while at least, a mixed economy of real and virtual services. And of course, the COVID crisis is not the only crisis we are grappling with. All of us have been engaged by the global Black Lives Matter movement in recent weeks and what it means for our society and our church. We continue to ponder the challenges of climate change. And last weekend, we experienced the tragedy of a terrorist attack within our own diocese in the centre of Reading. And we are still grieving for all those caught up in that situation and praying for all who serve and minister there. So as we hold all of this in our minds and in our prayers, what does Ezekiel have to say to us from exile in Babylon? It's really helpful to understand the context. 600 years before Christ, the tiny kingdom of Judah was overtaken by disaster. In 587 BC, the armies of Babylon destroyed the city and the temple and took many of the people into exile, thousands of miles from home. Many would never return. We get something of a sense of the desolation and anger of the people of God in exile as we read Psalm 137, "By the rivers of Babylon we sat down and wept." What has happened to the people chosen by God? Why has this disaster come upon us? Where will hope come from? The prophet Ezekiel is one of those exiles. He begins his ministry in Jerusalem, but much of his life is then spent in Babylon. Ezekiel is in no doubt at all about the spiritual poverty of his nation. But somehow through his exile, his vision of God and God's purposes grows and deepens. Towards the end of his life and ministry, Ezekiel comes to understand that after all, everything depends on God, and that God will act. Humanly speaking, his entire nation has come to an end. But God's purposes have not yet been fulfilled, and God will act to raise up God's people again in new and remarkable ways. This deep spiritual and theological shift is focused in Ezekiel's three visions of hope. The first is the promise of a new heart for everyone, found in Ezekiel 36. I will sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your uncleanness, and from all your idols I will cleanse you. A new heart I will give you, and a new spirit I will put within you, and I will remove from your body the heart of stone, and give you a heart of flesh. This renewal, this washing, this transformation is God's doing. It will not depend on us and how good we are, but on God's grace. The second is the great vision of the Valley of Dry Bones in Ezekiel 37, where Ezekiel sees God's people as disconnected, dried out parts of the human body. God asks Ezekiel a question about God's people. Mortal, can these bones live? Ezekiel does not know. But then there is a powerful vision of resurrection. God will do this. And then comes the third vision, which fills the final chapters of Ezekiel's prophecy, beginning in 40 and running through to 47. Ezekiel has now been in exile 25 years. Just take a moment to remember how long a span of the human life that is. 25 years. Ezekiel has had a generation to ponder the failings of his people, a generation to ponder how best to renew the nation and the world. And this is his response. The final vision is a vision of a new temple and the restoration of worship in the desert. It's a powerful word for our times. But the first seven chapters of that vision are remarkably dull. Ezekiel is given the plan and measurements for the temple, for the ordering of worship. There's one moment of light in 43 where the glory of the Lord returns to the temple. But mainly these chapters read rather like one of the many health and safety assessment documents for the reopening of churches and other buildings. They may save lives, but they do not give life. They're very inward-looking, and they are as dull as anything in the pages of the Bible. But then we come to the wonder and the glory of Ezekiel 47. Then he brought me back to the entrance of the temple. There water was flowing from below the threshold of the east, and the water was flowing down from below the south end of the threshold of the temple, south of the altar. Then he brought me out by way of the north gate, and led me round on the outside of the outer gate that faces towards the east. And the water was coming out on the south side. From the place of prayer and the place of sacrifice, there flows a tiny spring of water. A teardrop, really. The tiniest stream, running from below the threshold of the temple and out into the desert where nothing grows. Ezekiel follows the stream. He measures off 1,000 cubits. The water is ankle deep. He measures off 1,000 cubits. The water is knee deep. I should perhaps warn you that I normally take off my shoes and socks and roll up my trousers to the knee when I preach on this passage. Another 1,000 cubits, and the water is waist deep. Another 1,000, and, quote, it was a river that I could not cross, for the water had risen. It was deep enough to swim in, a river that could not be crossed. The water is a sign of life, of resurrection, in profound and beautiful ways. Ezekiel retraces his steps along the river bank. Already there are plants and trees and leaves and fruit growing in what has been a desert. There is a new Garden of Eden. The river itself teems with fish. But this water is more powerful still. South of Jerusalem, there is a landlocked sea known all over the world as the Dead Sea. The clue is in the name. The Dead Sea is 1,400 feet below sea level, Earth's lowest elevation on land. It is almost 1,000 feet deep, 30 miles long, and 9 miles wide. The River Jordan flows into it, and nothing flows out of it. The Dead Sea has its name for a reason. It is completely dead. Nothing lives in all that vast expanse of water. There are no fish. There are no aquatic plants. There are minuscule quantities of bacteria and fungi. But all the world over, the Dead Sea is the only place where David Attenborough cannot make a documentary. It is the one place on the entire surface of the planet where there are no plants or animals and no life. So what happens when this tiny trickle of water, this teardrop, from the place of prayer and sacrifice, has grown into a stream and then a river and enters the sea of stagnant waters? The waters will become fresh, such as the power of this living water. It will become fresh and everything will live where the river goes. People will stand fishing beside the sea from En Gedi to En Eglaim. It will be a place for the spreading of nets. Its fish will be of a great many kinds, like the fish of the great sea. Everything will live where the river goes. This is the turning point. This is where the great movement from death to life begins, in the great sweep of the story of salvation. It begins with a prophet who has lived 25 years with the failure of his nation, in which he shares. Yet his vision of God and the grace of God overcomes even the desert and the Dead Sea and the destruction of the nation. Ezekiel is able to imagine a river of life which will overcome even death itself and change everything. And where does this renewal begin? The renewal begins with the place of worship and prayer, established in such painstaking detail and by such hard work. It is here, in the place of sacrifice and prayer, that the gracious life of God begins to flow for the healing and rebuilding of the land and of the nations. Ezekiel 47 has a profound effect on the story of the people of God in the New Testament, and especially in the Gospel of John. Three times John's Gospel points us back to Ezekiel 47. With the woman at the well in John 4, we read of this living water. The water I will give will become in them a spring of water, literally a well of water, gushing up to eternal life. In John 7, Jesus stands up on the last and greatest day of the feast and calls out, "Let anyone who is thirsty come to me, and let the one who believes in me drink. As the scripture has said, out of the believer's heart shall flow rivers of living water." Now he said this about the Spirit. And in the story of the Passion, as they pierce his side, blood and water flow out. The stream of living water flows from the place of prayer and sacrifice. Everything will live where the river goes. I am sure that the church will have returned to Ezekiel's words countless times down the generations, as we've had to rebuild following war or disaster or famine or plague. But we do need to listen to the prophet's vision today. We are facing a long challenge of reopening our churches and rebuilding lives and communities. We are still living with COVID-19 and its effects on our physical and mental health and the well-being of society. We will be living out our Christian lives now as disciples in the context of a recession, most probably a very deep one, which will sharpen division and inequalities in the communities we serve across the country and around the world. The effects of grief and trauma on families and communities will be with us probably for years to come. We do not know what the consequences of COVID-19 will be on the young or on the old, on marriages and families, and patterns of association. And the world is facing a new movement now and fresh challenges around the strong cry that Black Lives Matter. There is a new reckoning with our history and culture and with our present and future. As the events of this last week have made all too clear for the people of Reading, we continue to grapple with the effects of terrorism on individual lives and families, even in the midst of everything else we face. We will all have become aware of some of our own weaknesses as individuals, and we will have become even more aware of the weakness and imperfection of the church at this time. This will not be the lowest point ever in the life of the Church of England or the Church of Jesus Christ. Each generation has its own challenges in the world and in the life of the church. But it is a moment when significant and deep renewal is needed. In such a moment, we will need to listen to Ezekiel's confidence in God after 25 years of pondering the disaster which has fallen upon his nation. The future does not depend on us. The future of the church and of society is in God's hands. With God, there is always the possibility of new life. Thanks to the clarity of the prophet's vision, we are able to see clearly where that life begins. In the place of prayer and sacrifice, established with such care and at such cost, we see the tiny stream of water flowing from beneath the threshold of the temple and out into the wilderness. Undoubtedly, it is going to be very hard and costly to re-establish our churches as places of prayer and worship in the coming weeks and months. Buildings will need to be cleaned and made ready. We will need to think through social distancing and questions around singing and music. We will need to begin again and adjust the way we celebrate baptism and the Eucharist and the rest of our sacramental life. There will be limits to the number of people we can receive into church at one time. There'll be many who continue to shield and not be able to join us physically or take up their ministry. There will be questions about how and when to resume in each church, which will not be straightforward in many places. And there'll be questions about how we sustain the virtual whilst resuming physical worship. Some people may be hesitant or reluctant to return. There will be some who will be tempted to reassess their ministries. Is it worth devoting the time, the energy, the effort to reopening our parish churches and our other gatherings for worship? Ezekiel 47 gives a very clear answer. It is. The place of worship and prayer you are building is the place from which new life will flow. It is the place of hope. It is the place of renewed love of God and love of neighbour. It is the place where God will call people afresh and heal lives and strengthen the faint-hearted and give courage and recall people to truth. Our nation will need its churches in the months and years to come, and need them to be centres of new life and growth and mercy and rivers of living water. Everything will live where the river flows. Thank you for all that you are doing and all that you will do to enable streams to flow in the desert.